This week on Retronauts, Alf helps us win the Korean War. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey. And right now, I am here to present my panel from PAX West 2022. If you weren't there, we did a little panel. I basically reworked an existing episode into a panel with a video component. It was a lot of fun. Sorry if you missed it, but because you're patrons, you get to hear the panel as if you were there, but without the risk of infection. So that's a benefit to you, the patron. Now, like I said earlier in this intro, there is a video component to the panel that you will not see if you're listening to the podcast. But thankfully, when this podcast goes live, probably like on the exact same time, I'm going to also be posting the video component of the panel. So if you're a $5 patron, well, you have to be hearing me in the first place, but you will have access to that video. You can choose to have it open while you're listening to the podcast, but I think you can listen to most of the podcast without the visual aids because we do some talking over the clips. So yes, that's basically it for the intro, and I hope you appreciate this little look into what our PAX West 2022 was like. And thanks again to Jeremy and, of course, first time on the show guest Reed Young for being on the panel. But that's it for this little intro. Please enjoy our panel from PAX West 2022. Coming out. This is the Retronauts PAX West 2022 panel, all about video games based on TV shows. And yes, this is my first panel in 3 years, so unfortunately you have to be nice to me and laugh at everything I say. I'm just saying that up front. So before I go on here, let's introduce the rest of our panel. Who is to the right of me? I guess stage left today.
Yes. Hi, I'm Jeremy Parrish. Bob, did you introduce yourself?
All right, I'm Bob Mackey.
There you go.
I assume everyone here knows that.
I mean, it does say up there, but
yes.
You don't actually look like a Simpsons character.
No one's punching me in the back of the head quite yet, but wait till the end of the panel.
That's what I'm here for.
That's Jeremy, and who else is here today?
Hi, I'm Reed Young, and I'm with Fangamer. So.
Yes, Reed is, I think, your first time on any Retronauts thing ever, right, Reed?
It is, first time. Very excited to be here and share all the knowledge that I have about Richard Karn. Can I get Karn heads out in the audience? Any Richard Karn fans? there's one.
I believe they're called Karniacs.
Oh, that's right, sir.
And this panel will be full of Karnography, so just to let you know, I don't see any children here. So that's just a warning up front. And I said that you have to laugh at all of my jokes, but also Reed Young is my wife's boss, so make sure you laugh even harder at his. And we'll talk about raises after the show. This episode is going to be a survey of very weird games. I have a lot of fun clips, with some with very harsh audio, so be warned. And we've done a lot of episodes about games based on certain cartoon series like Animaniacs and Tiny Toons. This time we are going to be focusing on... my computer went to sleep. This time we're going to be focusing on games based on live-action shows that aren't game shows and that aren't Star Trek either. So those are the two stipulations, because those are separate podcasts that will be much more boring than this. And I should note, though, that there's way more of these in pinball. Like, pinball has a lot more video games based on, pinball games based on TV shows. There's things like, you can play like a Baywatch pinball game, a Twilight Zone pinball game. The list goes on and on and on. A Rescue 911 pinball game, if you remember the William Shatner reality show from the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
They made that into a pinball game. For some reason, pinball was more viable for these kind of adaptations. But, yes. And I guess my theory is there aren't a lot of these in the world of retro games, because I think until maybe the last 20 years, TV was not respected. So, really, everything that got adapted into a video game was a cartoon. There was no Throne game. There was no Soprano show. It was all, TV was considered trash, so video games were not very concerned with that realm, I think. That's my theory, anyway.
I think you saw a lot of 8-bit television adaptations into video games in like the UK, because it was kind of like anything goes back then, and like the Spectrum market. So there's all kinds of just bizarre TV shows that no one here has ever seen or heard of.
Yeah.
That like, you know, 20 people over in the UK have deeply fond memories of growing up playing, and no one else knows.
I assume there are several young ones, like Spectrum games or something.
Seems likely.
And they're all probably pretty bad. But yes, we're going to go in kind of a chronological order. And the games get more tolerable to watch as we go on, so that's just to let you guys know up front. But I'm not going to tell you what this next game is based on. I want to see if you can recognize it based on the iconic theme song that they try to capture in this Atari 2600 game. So here is our first clip of the first game we'll be talking about today. And this was the most accurate depiction of the Korean War that 1983 could afford.
The helicopters really do just like land and just belly smash those guys as they're picking them up.
Well, that's why they don't teach us about the Korean War.
Yeah.
So in this game, are you the tank or the helicopter?
I think you're the tank, but I only watched videos of it, unfortunately. I'm going to reveal myself as a fraud when it comes to talking about the MASH game for Atari 2600. 1983. You heard their rendition of Suicide is Painless, but yes, this is based on what was at one time the most popular TV show that ever was made, and I think like nothing will beat the ratings of the finale. The I think Game of Thrones finale was maybe 11 million viewers, but the MASH finale is 50 million. Only Super Bowl games will ever beat that number. It was a phenomenon, and because of that, there was at least one video game.
I feel like to really capture the essence of MASH, that video game should only be played immediately after the 10 o'clock news, shortly before you go to bed. That's my MASH experience, is the iconic theme coming on, seeing radar look at the helicopter, and then my parents saying, go to bed.
Well, I mean, my experience with MASH is, I gave a lot of old TV shows the benefit of the doubt. I watched like Andy Griffith's show, Gomer Pyle, Beverly Hillbillies, but for some reason, that theme song gave me psychic damage, and it sent me scrambling away from the TV. So I think there was some built-in frequency only children can hear in that MASH theme song that sends them away from the TV.
Could be.
That's my theory.
I'd like to note that this has a Karn score of 2, because Alan Alda was in Marriage Story with Wallace Shawn, who was, you know, the guy from Princess Bride. He was Rex in Toy Story. And he was in Air Buddies with Richard Karn. So that's a Karn score of 2.
Wow.
Nice. So.
I want to see everything evaluated with the Karn scale.
I got you. I'm ready. So
I love Karntent. That's what we call it now, Karntent. But yes, MASH is based on the very popular TV show. They made a kind of crappy action game based on it. And the way it works is you compete with another helicopter. It's either AI or another player. You pick up as many wounded soldiers as you can. You drop them off at your base. And it's like an extremely basic version of Choplifter, which was released the previous year. So they had direct inspiration from an existing game that was very popular. And we all know MASH was famous for its trenchant insight into war and humanity, but also there were some laughs, but in the surgery scenes, there was no laugh track. That's what the show was famous for. If you're 50 or older, you might know that. And yes, this game does include surgery scenes, and just like in the show, there is no laugh track for these.
Oh, you were serious?
Yes. And as you can see, this is what the human body actually looks like.
This is peak performance here.
We are all basically Stay Puft Marshmallow Men.
Yeah, you've heard of trench foot, but he has trench thighs.
Yeah.
It's like a grown-up Kewpie mayonnaise thing.
Yeah, actually, he does look like a Kewpie mascot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the two modes of MASH. I guess they did capture all of the elements of the show except for all of the Emmy-winning dialogue. And this is basically, that version, that part of the game is basically Operation, where you have to pull out shrapnel from a wounded soldier. And in doing research for this, I found out that there is a talky version of this game that actually makes the surgery scenes kind of horrific because your patient talks back to you.
Oh, gosh.
Win a few, lose a few.
Oh, gosh.
You're okay.
I think that's supposed to be like Hawkeye talking.
Look at those mutton chops.
Ouch.
Oh, maybe not. Okay.
Oops.
So I captured all the quips there. That went on a little long. But yes, it's like a patient who's very smug, but also about to T-pose on the operating table and still awake. But that is essentially the talkie version of MATCH, which was lauded at the time, even though when you're like, you know, severing his carotid artery, he says, win a few, lose a few. And that's essentially what's going on there. But any other thoughts on MASH? I mean, very important in the cultural memory, the TV show, this game, not so much. And I was reading, there was a contest to come up with the concept for MASH 2, but it ended up not ever being made. So I think the concept was this game should not exist.
Yeah.
And they ran with that. They're like, oh, good idea. Let's not do this again.
I feel like this is a game I want to play all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
We need to get, while he's still alive, we need to get a quote about from Alan Alda about this game. Okay, so for our next game, we're moving on from MASH. We're still in the early 80s, late 70s, and I want to show you a live-action clip of the show, and I'll show you the game, just to show you what games are capable of at the time. So you're going to see the actual show, and then you'll see what the adaptation looks like. And this game, by the way, went unreleased. Let's take a look at the actual opening. The text at the bottom of the screen said "Save Hannibal," and I'm too young to have watched the A-Team, even in reruns. But I chose to cut off the intro there because I want to believe the show is about an old man just wearing a series of wigs, just a demented old man.
Kind of was.
Is that Hannibal?
Okay. That's John Hannibal Smith.
Okay. I have no knowledge of this, but yeah, apparently the premise of this game is Mr. T's head has been severed and has come to life because, I mean, he is the most iconic member of the A-Team with his iconic haircut and chains and everything, and I guess they decided to capture that by just saying, what if it was just about his head? It's sort of like an early version of Zombie Nation.
Exactly.
Or kind of like a crossover with John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, exactly. I can see his head crawling around in an Antarctic base right now. But yes, this game developed by Howard Scott Warshaw, a famously tragic figure in the games industry because he did develop some very good games like Yara's Revenge, Raiders of the Lost Ark, but he was also behind the famous or infamous E.T. game, which we covered on Retronauts recently. And honestly, it's not that bad of a game. I just think it's too ambitious, and there are much worse games out there. What do we think?
Yeah, I mean, he made a lot of really deep, very well-considered games, and E.T. probably would have been that had he been given more than 6 weeks to put it together, and, you know, had the Atari 2600 been capable of doing more than it could.
Yeah.
There's, like, that as a game, I think, actually is ripe for a reinvention, like a remake, someone to actually, you know, bring it together. This one, I don't know about, though. There's only so much you can do with Mr. Head, T's head shooting things.
Yeah, even Steven Spielberg was like, why didn't you just make a Pac-Man clone? This is all you had to do. But yeah, in the tradition of Howard Scott Warshaw, it's a bunch of like different game modes. So in the first one you saw, you basically play the floating head of Mr. T. I guess the character's name is B.A. Baracus. I'm taking this based on the Wikipedia entry about...
Correct. B.A. stands for bad attitude,
ooh,
by the way.
So it was the 80s. It was not badass Baracus.
No. It was, this was network television, sir.
It was 8 p.m., the family hours. So enemies are approaching in various rows. And if they make it to the rocket on the right side of the screen, it rises a little higher, and you're supposed to kill them before that happens. And that's essentially what you were watching there. I know it's very abstract, but that's kind of the realm that Howard Scott Warshaw operated in. But we have another phase of the game, and it's just as inexplicable if you don't read the instructions. So again, another severed head. And I guess Mr. T, oh no, he's alive.
So this is the final battle with Devo, I believe.
Apparently that's Decker, another character on the A-Team. Is this real? Is this real,
yes,
Jeremy?
Okay. He was the colonel who was trying to capture the A-Team after they escaped from military prison, but he would have worn a military cap, not a fedora. So I don't know what Howard Scott Warshaw was going for there. It has kind of like a Mr. T versus the, you know, Al Capone era mafia kind of vibe to it.
I don't think this is canon because in that segment of the game, you fire lightning bolts out of Mr. T's head at Decker. and they ricochet down to destroy warheads. So it feels like maybe an early version of like a Link Ganon fight where you're reflecting things. I don't know. I mean, these are like forward-thinking ideas, but the hardware can't handle them. And if you're just watching it, it just looks like a mess, like just a bunch of random ideas floating.
So you're trying to zap electricity at Decker and then cause that to reflect down to destroy warheads?
Yes. That's what's happening in that clip.
I kind of feel like that might be lifted from Konami's Puyan.
Okay,
where you're
like
shooting arrows at pigs and you can reflect the arrows down off the pigs, which have sabers to deflect your arrows to pop the balloons of other pigs because video games.
He could have been a Puyan player, Howard Scott Warshaw.
I don't doubt it.
I did not get a clip of the third part of the game because it will be projected out of big speakers in the conference room, and I don't want to do that to you. So basically, you fire lasers out of Mr. T's head at a helicopter. Mr. T's head's doing a lot of different functions in this game, and I don't think he was consulted about this.
I mean, they spent a lot on the art, so you got to get your money's worth.
Yes. So. But yeah, you're firing lasers at out of his head at a helicopter where the launch controls are, and that's essentially it. This game never came out because Atari was going through some stuff in 1983, as was Howard Scott Warshaw, and this was going to be a game with a different with a non-licensed product called Saboteur. It was about a robot. You were going to be tasked with stopping a secret alien base on a planet from launching a warhead, but it was basically reskinned into being an A-team game, which is why Mr. T gains the powers of a robot temporarily in this game. But again, never released. And it just exists as a prototype now, which I guess people found over the ages.
And I'd like to note that the Karn score of Mr. T, three. Hops from Mr. T to Richard Karn. Mr. T was in the Blues Brothers with Stephen Williams, who was in Deep Red, with John Capellos, the janitor from Breakfast Club. He was in Snow Buddies to Richard Karn.
Okay, wow. I'm surprised Mr. T never made a Tool Time appearance.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping for like a single hop, but we didn't have any.
I feel like he would have ended up there in the late 90s, but maybe I'm understanding him.
He kind of vanished from the media for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
After Mr. T serial, it was kind of a point of no return.
Until the late aughts ironic acceptance of Mr. T, I think. So we're going to move on from the A-Team. I know you're all very sad about that, but we have to. We're going to move on to, we're going to see how this insanely late, popular late night soap opera somehow became a text adventure game. And we're going to watch a transition from the title theme to the game's title theme. It was very popular, but again, you must be 50. So as this Dallas Quest thing scrolls up over the course of the next 5 minutes, I can tell you that opening of Dallas is not selling me on the town of Dallas.
No, I was going to say, I grew up in West Texas, and when I think West Texas, I don't think disco.
This is a TV 13 panel. I can say it makes Dallas look like a real shithole.
That part I can agree with.
Yes. It's like a Dragon Quest title scroll. There we go. It has too much majesty behind it. But yes, they did make a text adventure game based on Dallas, and it is very, very loosely based on Dallas, a drama that ran from 78 to 91. And it's mostly famous through, to most of us in this room, a Simpsons parody of one of its more famous two-parters, the Who Shot JR, from, I believe, 1980. So we mostly know that from the Who Shot Mr. Burns parody, but it was like one of the biggest TV events of the decade, landing in 1980. But yes, this we're talking about when people watch a lot of things on TV. So Finale of MASH had like 50 million viewers. The resolution of Who Shot JR had 41 million viewers. And it is like one of the more loosely based games that we're going to cover, if you can believe it, because I believe Dallas writers were involved, but it's basically bookended by Dallas characters sending you on a quest to find this map to treasure. But in the middle of the game, it is all just a text adventure game BS with none of the trappings of Dallas. Like, you land on a desert island, you befriend a monkey, you're kidnapped by cannibals.
Wow.
And there are very adventure game puzzles like, oh no, I'm on a boat and there's a hole in the boat and we're sinking. I'll give the monkey tobacco and it'll plug the boat with its tail. And that's how you solve that problem. So these were just common adventure game ideas at the time, but nothing to do with Dallas, and the caricatures are ghoulish. Oh, sorry.
So I just wanted to say that an intermediate step there would have been that the monkey has to form the tobacco into a bung and then use that to plug the hole, and that's where people got lost.
I assume the monkey would just pull a disgusting mass of tobacco out of its mouth and just slam it in there.
I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't repurpose that 10 years later as a Friends tie-in with Marcel the Monkey. It could have been more canonical.
The Capuchin Monkeys were very hot in the 90s before we found out how dangerous they are. But yeah, the plot of this is, and you must know Dallas characters to care about this, but Sue Ellen Ewing, which is JR's wife, sends you, a detective, on a hunt for a map to a South American oil field, and adventure game antics ensue. And I do have a clip of this game, but I must say, it's not fun to watch a clip of a text adventure game. So I just got a clip of the ending, and I put in music from the Dallas TV show, which sounds a lot like music from Lupin the Third. So this is essentially how the ending of the game plays out. You give the map, and the family wants to fight over it. And please take your time to read all of this text. And that's Larry Hagman, probably.
Said you're surrounded by excited Ewings.
And it's one of the very few sincere uses, I'm sick of all this fussing in a feud. And there ends the Dallas quest. So I saved you guys all like 3 hours. And then you get the great theme song at the end. The only other music in the game. And that was Dallas Quest. So we're going to move on, unless we have any other Dallas thoughts here.
Current score on this one, 2. Larry Hagman was in Sidekicks with Louis Gossett Jr., who was in Bram Stoker's Legend of the Mummy with Richard Karn. Let's hear it for Richard Karn.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, we could have gotten him for this panel. I think if I asked. I don't know what he's up to. I mean, he's counting his tool time and Family Feud money, I know.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to JJ and Jeff. So this was really relocalized for the American market. It's a very weird comedy action game by Hudson Soft. And it's basically them making another Adventure Island game with famous comedians from Japan. Of course, JJ and Jeff are not real people in America, but Kato and Ken are, because that was what the original video game was in Japan. It was based on a Japanese TV series called Kato-chan, Ken-chan, Gogi-ken TV. It ran for about 6 years, and it was a wacky TV show starring two Japanese comedians, and it directly inspired America's Funniest Home Videos. The producer of that show saw a segment in this comedy show, and he thought, like, I can base an entire show off of this, and I think they even get credit at the end of every America's Funniest Home Videos, or their production company does, but that's where that comes from. And of course, obviously, it's never, ever been aired here in any way. And there are like scant YouTube clips of it online. But they were very popular in the late 80s to the very early 90s. So of course, we see a lot of Japanese comedians making appearances in video games in a way that American comedians really don't, I don't think. I mean, there were a few Dennis Miller games. That was a mistake. It wasn't allowed to happen again, but
we had Hook with Robin Williams.
That's true. I don't know if they were allowed to use his likeness, though.
Oh, probably not.
Yeah. But yeah. Kato and Ken, in case you don't know about them, they were very big for a very long time, and one of them has passed away, unfortunately. I believe Ken Shimura is the one who passed away in 2020. But they had a comedy music troupe called The Drifters that actually opened for the Beatles at Budokan. So that very famous concert, Kato and Ken were there opening for the Beatles. And their game is actually based on a segment of their show called Detective Story, where it's one of them, I believe it's Kato, plays a very Clouseau-like detective, a very clueless detective, trying to solve crimes. And we can show you a bit of the gameplay here. You can see why it was far too rude for American sensibilities. And by the way, this is one of the few games where you can play as Reggie Fils-Aimé, as you can see in this clip. And he is here, and I am afraid of him. So there you have it.
Wow.
It's a game about shitting and farting.
So in the same way that Mario jumps, Ken farts, and that's like your mechanic for interacting with the world?
Yes, and there is a lot of fart humor in the series. It's, wow. It's very body. But then they would change it to, again, they'd swap into white characters, and the farting would turn into like spray paint attacks. And we had not reached the era of like Ren and Stimpy yet. So like gross, this was like a pre-Booger Man world where we weren't ready for a character to fart in a video game.
Howard Stern had yet to cross the Rubicon.
Yes, exactly. I think, I don't know who the first video game character to fart is. I think that's our job to find that out. But it was happening in Japan far earlier. But yeah, it's I think this game was viewed as a bad game for a while, but after playing it, it is basically just like Hudson saying, let's just make another Adventure Island, but with these characters, and it plays out just like Adventure Island, down to the bosses that all have like different heads but the same bodies. And you run through, you collect fruit. You saw like a melon in that little clip there. It's like kind of the same game and in the same format, and I think it's pretty fun. I don't know if either of you have played Kato and Ken, but it's kind of neat.
I've missed out.
I mean, it's the graphics are pretty impressive.
Yes.
What system was this on?
TurboGrafx-16.
Wow.
Yes.
I missed out.
It was the home of gigantic sprites at the time. But yeah, I don't have any more clips of the American version, but there were very specific references to things in the Japanese TV show that were just localized into something else, which made them even weirder. And it feels like one of the more thorough attempts to reskin a game in 1990. Like, I guess they were desperate for new releases because like this and maybe the Dragon Power, but I feel like that was more of a low effort. They just like kind of shaved Goku's head, right? And turn panties into a sandwich.
That was on NES, though.
Yeah, but it was
and
still...
That was Bandai.
Right, but I mean, like, in general, in the world of localizations, that was more of a low-effort way to reskin something.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, yeah. I don't know. The TurboGrafx was really weird because if you look at the Japanese equivalent, the PC Engine, it has an amazing library of so many games that could have easily been brought over here, but for whatever reason, NEC and TTI were like... good games. I don't know. Let's take, you know, just a few and totally reinvent them into something incoherent. It was a weird time.
I guess the pack-in too was Keith yep. Courage, which was this reskin of an anime game.
Yep.
Yeah. But yes, so as with what would happen at the time, a lot of American celebrities would appear on Japanese TV, not just in commercials. I mean, you've probably seen a lot of commercials like Arnold Schwarzenegger and characters like that. Thinking this will never surface in America. There will never be a thing called the internet that will see this and I'll be embarrassed for it. And real people, real actors from America did appear on the show, and I'll present a clip next here. Parts of it are in Japanese, but you don't need to understand Japanese to just understand the pure humor at play here. So this is a clip that only aired in Japan from a very beloved actor who is now dead, so we can't insult him anymore.
Tonight, you stay my house, okay?
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Tadaima.
Okay.
Kuchinara, American Sam Tolibin came.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Simonaro. But it's been taking very good care of me in the investigation, and I'm very pleased to meet you, and he's invited me to stay in your house, and I'm very grateful.
Hello?
And that was a fart, because Leslie Nielsen loved fart jokes. And I don't know if anyone knows this, but when he became an actor in more comedic things, he carried around a little fart machine, like a little thing that played fart sound effects. And he loved doing it on set. And his tombstone literally says, "Let her rip." So his love of farts is immortalized on his epitaph, which is great. So I'm glad they worked that in, although it seems like he doesn't know why he's there or that he was given a script at all. Just like, respond to these people as if they were speaking English to you. So,
I mean, it was as awkward as you would expect it to be if he had no idea what was going on.
Yes.
So, mission accomplished.
Exactly. But yeah, that's Leslie Nielsen on Kato and Ken's show back in, I'm assuming, the late 80s. I'm sure Naked Gun 2.5 was coming out there or something, and he was flown out there and very jet-lagged and shoved into a set as Frank Drebin. So we're going to move on to the highlight of the panel, Alf. So for the Master System, did somebody just woo Alf? They must be confused. I'm wearing an Alf shirt, by the way, and if you're ever wondering why hasn't Alf come back, people were giving me very sour looks upon seeing this shirt. I think Alf is a hated figure, so I might have to change after this panel is over. But yes, this is something for the 40 and under crowd, not just the 50 and under crowd, as our past games have been. Because Alf was a very popular but short-lived puppet sitcom, 1986 to 1990. And this game released in 89, I think for the holiday season, very close to the height of Alf mania. And Alf's pose on the title screen indicates the state of the game. He's just saying, why? Because if you had a Master System, life was hard enough. But what if you got the Alf game for Christmas that year?
I actually got the Alf game for Christmas last year from my boss.
Oh, boy.
So
Did you take that as a message?
It was actually an act of kindness, believe it or not.
And I was working on an Alf impression the past few days, but it either sounds like Sylvester Stallone or Bullwinkle. So I'm not going to do it here. But in case you need to be refreshed on Alf, I pulled a clip, and it shows that Alf was not afraid to get political on his show.
Hello, pizza barge? Yeah, send over a large pepperoni.
Alf, we're on a budget.
All right. Charge it to the Tanners.
We've imposed on the Tanners enough.
Again, you're right. Charge it to Donald Trump. Hello? Hello?
So yes, even back in 1988, there were Donald Trump jokes. And it was a simpler time in comedy where a puppet could just say, "Hello, pizza barge," and they would laugh and howl and clap.
They would, that's all they would play the laugh track, you mean?
Yes, exactly. They would just crank it up. But yeah, I believe that was when Alf was, they were running out of ideas, so Alf was living with a blind woman. He met a lot of blind people, I think, in the course of the show, but just people that didn't understand he was an alien, or he wore a series of hats, I think. I think that's how Alf works.
kind of like Link.
I think so, yeah.
Kirby, yeah.
Mario.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But yes, Alf, his games were not at the quality of any of those characters because this was a really bad mix of an adventure game and an action game that just feels extremely cheap to the point where there are no sound effects in this game. And I'm sure they would be annoying if they existed, so maybe we're dodging a bullet here. But this was just sold at the last minute during the holiday season to cash in on basically the last season of Alf. And it's also incredibly short. Like, if you go online looking up a speed run without, like, hacking through walls or doing different tricks, just playing through the game straight takes about 7 minutes. Because it's like, you do three things or three to seven things in the game, and then there are annoying platforming sections in between those segments in which you die in one hit. And that's essentially the way Alf works. And this is the second Alf game. The first Alf game is called Alf the First Adventure, and it's basically just Pac-Man with Elf. With Alf, sorry. And it's so boring, I don't even want to show it to you. Just imagine the ghosts are Willie Tanner and Alf is Pac-Man, and that's basically the entire game. And, like, I guess power pellets are cats. That's what happens there. But, yeah, this is, like, I feel like Europeans, and we're in America, so we're safe to talk about them. This is a special kind of adventure game that they really seem to focus on. A lot for microcomputers, because when I covered the Garfield games, a lot of Garfield games were this, where it's a bad mix of action game and platformer, and neither one is good.
It's probably Dizzy's fault if you trace it back to the origins.
I think we can blame Dizzy.
That stupid egg.
Are there goblins involved? Is Goblins a series that does that too?
There might have been a Goblin series. I think that came later.
Linus Spacehead, is he a guy?
He is a guy.
Okay, yeah, we can blame all those people. But yeah, it's a very bad game. I don't need to tell you this, but it's one of the few times a sitcom got a video game, and we'll cover another one of those later. But the problem with making an Alf game is that the Alphaverse is very small. Alf barely has 100 episodes because Alf can't leave the house. I guess they find a new house for him to stay in later, as you saw in the clip, but essentially no one can know about him, which limits the things he can do and limits the possibilities. So they have to really play fast and loose with the rules of both Alf's world and the Tanner house. So here is a little clip of the Alf game, and I apologize for everything that you're about to see. The music, the sounds. Alf is going to the basement. And as you remember from the show, the Tanner basement hides a series of intricate caves.
There's a cat right there.
I know. That's
he just
power
past it.
That's got to be a power up.
And Alf has a salami as a weapon. And there you go. Thank you for turning that music down. Yes, that's Alf. And there are three action segments like that. And again, Alf dies in one hit. And, you know, if there was a fifth season of Alf, it should have explored the caverns beneath the Tanner home. I think that would have been ripe territory for a sitcom.
Where does the Alf cartoon fit into the canon of the game?
You know, they didn't make an Alf cartoon game, and it's like much more fertile ground for a video game, I think.
I agree.
Because it's more fantastical.
It took place on the planet Melmac. What's not to love?
I agree. Like, if Alf existed another year, maybe the NES would have seen an Alf game, but also, the weird thing is the point of this Alf game is to destroy the premise of the show, which is to get off home, which if Alf goes home, there can be no Alf show. So I think this game is for Alf haters. And there's one major screw you moment in the game. There's a store in the game because, of course, there's like an economy in this Alf game. And if you buy the book in the store and use it, Alf reads you a short story that ends the game and starts you over from the beginning. So there you have it. That's Alf, everybody.
Actually, I'd like to note the Karn score for Alf. So Paul Fusco, who was the puppeteer for Alf, he was in, get this, Donald Trump's The Art of the Deal, the movie. And then, you know, he was with Jack McBrayer in that, who's the Kenneth Parcell from 30 Rock. He was in Cats and Dogs with Wallace Shawn again from Princess Bride, who was in Air Buddies with Richard Karn.
Oh, which Air Buddies installation are we talking about here?
There's a variety of them. This one was just Air Buddies.
Okay.
The original.
I was hoping for Seventh Inning Fetch.
No, that does come in later, though. There is a Karn score that does include Seventh Inning Fetch.
Well, I'm glad he's getting work. We're going to move on from Alf. I apologize. But we're going to move on to roller games. So I have to explain roller games to everybody because it's something I recently just learned about because there was a pinball game for roller games. There was an arcade game for roller games. There was an NES game for roller games. And until I did this research initially, I didn't know roller games was an existing property. Well, it is. So first of all, the NES game is rad as hell. Classic Konami licensed game. The music is great. It's way too hard. Great sample drums. But again, the license has been lost to time because when you see characters and cinema scenes in roller games, these are real people from the roller games universe. And roller games essentially was a single season attempt to turn roller derby, decades of history of roller derby, into a phenomenon similar to professional wrestling. And that was experiencing a huge boom at the time, and it even had like fake storylines. Like it was a soap opera entertainment sport just like WWF at the time. But it lasted one season in 89, and you know, Konami, they backed a lot of winners. Like Konami, they went in on TMNT in 1989. That was a good choice. But around the same time, they also placed their chips on roller games and the Mission Impossible Peter Graves series from 1989 to 91, I believe. So,
ouch.
Not all good choices. Like this was not a Tiny Toon style choice, but they really believed in roller games to the point where they made two different games. Were either of you, Jeremy or Reed, aware of the roller games phenomena, the short season it lasted in 89?
No, I mean, to me, that all kind of blends in with a lot of these attempts to turn, you know, weird sport ideas into media properties. So it's kind of background noise to me. There's also, I feel like in the 70s, you saw a lot of movies based on roller derby. So maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like that they all just kind of form this giant mass of people skating around and hitting each other.
I feel like we should be making jokes about roller games and not XFL because it's funnier. And you're going to see what roller games holds because I have some roller games clips. So, yeah, I will tell you a bit about the other games later. But this is basically, I'm going to show a clip of the NES game that will transition into actual footage of roller games. And you're going to see a very important moment of roller games history. So let's see that next in our next clip here. So, you know, roller skating through the Amazon, very easy. very good traction on those roller skates. And again, it's just like Double Dragon.
Yeah.
And really good music, really good graphics, and we have to pay attention to this.
Whoa. This season at the Super Roller Dome, Bad Attitude's Monster Man got a frozen treat from the Icebox. A disgruntled Georgia Haas looks on as Icebox makes history with the first ever...
Now, who says this isn't real?
So I did not add an explosion. That was actually in the actual show. And we saw Icebox cool down Monster Man. And that was a moment of roller games history, a very short-lived program that seemed like a lot of fun. But it went bankrupt pretty early because nobody knows how roller derby is played or the rules. It's very confusing. I really don't understand it.
I think it's Calvin Ball, basically.
I think so, too. And this one with fake fights added to it. So there's an arcade version as well. And unlike the NES game, it doesn't take place in a hellscape, apocalypse kind of setting. It actually tries to mimic the sport, in quotes, itself. And here's a clip of this. Do not get sick by looking at this.
I mean, this is kind of innovative, like enemies coming from both sides. You're skating backwards and forwards at the same time.
It's a very, I mean, both of these games are very good looking for a license that nobody remembers.
Yeah.
Probably will never, there's not going to be a roller games collection by Digital Eclipse or anything like that.
That was a Konami arcade game?
It was, yeah.
Okay, it has that kind of weird, doughy look that a lot of Konami arcade sprites had back then. I feel like their NES games were usually better than their arcade stuff.
Yeah, it might have come like right around the time the Ninja Turtles arcade game came out, because it looks like the fighting game that came out before that. I think it's just called Crime Fighters, with really like stocky, tinier sprites. And unfortunately, none of the roller games we talked about include the main attraction of the sport, which we'll see in this next clip. And I'm sad.
The inclusion of the gators in the sport has been controversial.
Yes, that's right, live alligators.
Oh my gosh.
By a 4-2 vote, the teams of roller games have chosen to include the reptiles, but only in a sudden death overtime. And we're not yet sure what the ramifications of that will be. And again, as they approach the pit, the wrestling begins. Down goes the team of gator skater.
Now the violator's got him by the shirt. He's got him up to the rail. He's put him on the... Away from him, they could be devastated. Get that man out of the pit. I can't believe what we're witnessing here tonight. Chuck, you know, I saw the skull distract that T-Bird skater.
But they have won in sudden death overtime.
Come on, get out of there, buddy!
There you go. So, yes, there were live alligators in roller games.
You know, I was going to say the NES game kind of looks and feels like Bayou Billy on roller skates, but apparently that's canon to the TV show.
Yeah. They just forgot to add the alligators to drag and drop them, but... Yeah, too bad. Mike Drucker was going to be on the panel. He had to drop out because of work reasons. I was going to ask him how Floridian this entire sport is, because I feel like the addition of alligators that are delivered to the arena by hunks, as you saw in the clip, it feels very Floridian. But yes, that was Roller Games. Again, a license lost to time. But now we're going to talk about a show that more people know about.
Wait, I think this is Reed's moment.
Oh. Yeah.
Are you ready? Are you ready for the Karn score? 3. This one took me a long time to run down.
Oh, so there's a Karn Roller Games connection.
Yes. So Wally George, who's the guy you heard screaming in that clip, he was known as the father of combat TV. He was in a comedy called Club Fed with Karen Black, who was with, you know, blah, blah, blah. Chris Christopherson gets involved here in Snow Buddies with Richard Karn. So,
oh, nice,
there you go.
Nice.
Score of 3.
He's all over the Buddies movies.
Thank you.
I need to make an appointment with Netflix tonight,
yes.
I think. Okay, we're going to move on to Gilligan's Island. So, yes, Gilligan's Island sadly never got an ironic 90s reboot, which could still happen. We're looking down the barrel of a Munsters reboot that looks really bad. But this never happened with Gilligan's Island. But in 1990, Human Entertainment made a bizarre video game via Bandai at the time. So Human Entertainment, they were known for making very weird games. Clock Tower, they made that. Before they made Gilligan's Island, they made Monster Party, which was another very strange but fun game. A little janky. There's a lot going on here, and it's not executed well, but it's an interesting idea because it's essentially basically bad eco. Like, you are the skipper, Gilligan is following you around, and there are 4 stages. Each one is the format of a television show. And it's basically a series of fetch quests across these different forest mazes. And a big part of this is a UI dedicated to the dialogue box on the screen. Unfortunately, they did not have the space to include a lot of exchanges between the characters. So you really just watch the skipper be passive aggressive towards Gilligan for all like 8 hours of this game. Here's a very brief clip. So yeah, you basically have to do things as one character, but you're babysitting another character who's like always falling into holes. If you leave the screen before him, you have to go back. It's a big pain. But they're trying to do interesting things. There weren't really escort quests in the NES era for the most part.
Yeah, this is where they got the idea for Daikatana.
Yes. You can't leave your buddy Superfly behind, is that correct?
Correct.
Is that how it goes? it's not a lot of fun. And the strange thing is, it's also missing Ginger. So if you're a real Ginger stan, She's not going to be in this game. I'm sorry, folks. I think she had a contentious relationship with the series because she was not in the later made-for-TV movies, even the one with the Harlem Globetrotter. She sat that one out.
So is Marianne in this, but not Ginger?
That's true, yes.
So they skip Marianne in the theme song sometimes, but Ginger in the games.
That's right. Ginger is always in the theme song, but sometimes they say and the rest, which is Ginger.
Professor and Marianne.
Yeah. It's Professor and Marianne erasure, and I don't like that. I'm glad they changed it. Actually, Bob Denver lobbied for them to get their names called out in the opening lyrics, so God bless that man. So... yes, basically four levels with a lot of dialogue in them, more than you would expect. And that's basically Gilligan's Island. So, yeah, not a lot going on there. But it's interesting to see that Fester's Quest was a game that got a... Adam's Family was a game that got Fester's Quest around the same time. And Gilligan's Island got a game roughly a little bit after that. But they were looking at these boomer sitcoms and saying, how do we make these into 8-bit games? And sometimes they were successful, and most of the times they weren't. So instead of just telling you what our final feature game is, I will show you a clip of the source material.
I supercharged my riding mower! Oh no, I've killed Wilson. Looks like it's back to jail for me.
And yes, we moved on to the game at the center of our art here, Home Improvement. The only time Richard Karn has been depicted in pixelated form, although not his only video game appearance. Do you have info on this, Reed?
Oh, no, I did nothing for this one.
Was there a Karn score for Gilligan's Island?
As matter of fact, there was. The Karn score for Gilligan's Island is 3. Bob Denver was in The Invisible Woman with Harvey Korman from Blazing Saddles, who was in Jingle All the Way with Jim Belushi, who was in Snow Buddies with Richard Karn.
Excellent.
Amazing.
He is at the fabric of everything we do, I think. So, Tim Allen was the biggest celebrity of 1994, which is why this game came out in 94. He had the biggest movie, the number one book, and number one sitcom. Home Improvement was the number one show at one point. So it makes sense, like, this guy's hot, let's get a game out of Home Improvement. And they did. And basically, just like the Alf game we saw, it takes very serious liberties with the source material. And the story of this game is Tim Taylor, he's about to show off a new line of Binford tools named after him on the show Tool Time, the show within a show, but somebody steals them. So the rest of the game is him traversing through neighboring TV sets, killing people in dinosaur costumes with power tools until he finds these tools named after him. They don't teleport him to another world. When I saw footage of this game, I thought, oh, does Tim Allen go back in time? He's like, no, he's going through different sets on this TV station he works at. And that's the plot of this game. And here's a very irritating clip of how the game actually plays. It's just like Earthworm Jim meets Bionic Commando.
Oh, wow.
That sounds too good. That's very deceptive, Bob.
That's what they wanted.
Okay.
But we really missed out on no playable Al Borland. This could have been a two-player adventure, but I think they thought Al was OP.
Look at this. This looks incredible.
I'm hearing someone say this game was great.
The sound effects are so satisfying.
Yes.
Like the boom.
That's the magic of the Super NES.
I guess so, yeah. That sound chip really does it.
So warm, so muffled. it's like playing a video game underwater.
If you want games that have more power, this is the one for you. This one is developed by Imagineering. That may sound familiar if you follow some of the bad licensed games we've covered over the time. Like a lot of bad Simpsons games. The Ghostbusters 2 game. And it's basically two notable Atari 2600 developers who couldn't quite adapt to what the NES audience wanted. So this, I think, is their most successful attempt, but it's still not that great. And again, this is one of two pieces of game art that features Richard Karn. The other is a Family Feud game, so.
Oh, yes.
If you want to collect all the Richard Karn games, it's a very achievable thing to do here.
I think I saw Family Feud up at the Pink Gorilla booth, if you want to jump on that.
Ooh, there will be a race.
There was only one, though, so complete in box. It's your chance to get ahead of the game on the Karn Mania.
Yeah, if anybody gets up and leaves now, it's forgiven.
We're not going to take it personally.
Yes, because the panel's almost over. We've made the cost of that game rocket up in value, and we apologize to the retro gaming collector
market.
I think
it was $15, now it's going to be $16.
Once they hear about this panel's being live streamed, so prices are changing as we talk. I have one more clip to play, but I do want to say thanks to everybody for coming to the panel again. I've not done one of these in like 3 years, so it's fun to come back to PAX and see all of you, and thanks again to PAX for approving the panel. It's been a lot of fun. But yes, we are Retronauts. We hope you enjoy the show. Please give us money at patreon.com/retronauts, or just listen for free because we have like 1,000 episodes. We've been doing this for, we're in our 16th year now, so we hope you listen to our podcast and like them. Jeremy and Reed, do you have anything you want to say before we head out here with a final clip?
Carnheads unite.
What did you say?
Karn heads. I'm working on
it. Oh, okay, okay. You're workshopping it. I got it.
Yeah, we'll get there.
No, thanks everyone for coming out. It's nice to see faces.
And Reed, are you getting any ideas for Fangamer merch from any of these? Are you going to get the Alf license? Are we thinking about Kato and Ken? The estate could grant it to you.
Yeah, I'm working on getting, I'm going to have somebody edit in a little think bubble above my head here. And I think we got some more Karn in our future at Fangamer.
Don't count roller games out, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's the sport for today. We didn't need it in the 90s. We need that kind of blood sport today with alligators.
I mean, yeah, a shirt featuring the father of combat sport, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we can make that work.
Or just add alligators to existing sports. That could be happening in our future. Yes, here's one final clip, and thanks for coming out. And thanks again. Thank you, actually, to my wife, Nina Matsumoto, for helping me translate this, because there are a few subtitles here. But you're going to see the end of Frank Drebin's adventure with Kato and Ken.
Well, it's wonderful working with such a fine detective as yourself. Let us both continue in our endeavors to wipe out crime in the world. And Mrs. Shimura, your cooking was fantastic, and I hope one day you'll enjoy the fantastic cooking of my wife. So, I just hope that one day we shall meet again. Shimura-san? Sayonara.
Sayonara. Thank you. Bye.
Welcome.
Jin-jin.
なんか落ちとるよな。まあでもさすがに一流のキャップだな。
Now that's comedy. Thank you for coming out, folks. Appreciate it.
Oh, that was beautiful.